Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 10 for October 10th, 2006.
Look what they've done to my boy!
It's time for another MacBreak Weekly, wherein our pundits gather once a week to talk about the latest Mac news. Here today with us from the Pixel Core, Alex Lindsay.
Hello.
Hey. Who always does that? I don't know who it is or what he's doing, but I like it. And Merlin Mann from 43folders.com.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, who knows what Scott Bourne's going to come up with from the iLife Zone. Scott Bourne.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Okay. We got a bunch of cut-ups here. I'm Leo Laporte, and this is the time to talk about MacBreak Weekly. I was saying to the guys just before we started, what do we start with? And I thought, well, it's obvious. The new Apple ads.
They're really good.
I love them.
As always.
I love them.
You know what? Here's the funny thing that I saw is you don't see this on many ads because most of the time we think of ads as an interruption. But on CNET, they actually have these. They're running the Apple ads, and at the end of the ad, it has a click if you want to see the rest of the ads.
Yeah.
Which, of course, I went and did, and I watched all the ones that I had missed.
People dig the new ads. I mean, dig, D-I-G-G. They say, oh, there's new ads out, and people actually go to a website. That's a sign of an agency that's doing its job. If you make an ad that everybody is actually going onto the net to see.
Yeah, and that's what I think a lot of ad agencies need to take notes. Rather than trying to constantly trying to force the ads on us, make them something that we actually want to see. And they're not; those aren't expensive ads. I mean,
no,
the actors might have some expense, but I mean, other than that, it's a lock off camera and a white psych.
So there's one that's let me just play the one of them, which I really like, which is the counselor.
Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC, and I feel inadequate.
Okay.
PCs get viruses. We can't do as much out of the box.
I don't know why you're so hard on yourself. I don't get it.
Mac, why don't you say something positive about PC?
Okay, easy. PC, you are a wizard with numbers and you dress like a gentleman.
PC?
Well, Mac, I guess you are a little better at creative stuff.
Well, thank you.
Even though it's completely juvenile and a waste of time.
Maybe you should come in twice a week.
I have to say, I think they're very funny. There's one. It's actually, if you want to parse what these mean, so this one is clearly about better creativity. There's one on making home movies, and there's one that actually has got the Mac dressed in a business suit and really sending the PC.
Oh, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
Here, I'll just play a little bit
of that. What's with the big boy clothes?
Oh, this, I just got back from a meeting. So.
He's wearing a suit.
Why were you at a meeting?
Well, I do work stuff, too. I've been running Microsoft Office for years.
Microsoft Office work stuff. Oh, boy.
What?
Oh, I knew this day would come.
PC.
I just need to sit down. Oh, wow.
There's plenty of work out there for both of us. I don't know why you're acting like this.
Why go on? Just let me lie here and depreciate.
That's my favorite line. Just let me lie here and depreciate. The actor who plays the PC is from the Daily Show, right?
Oh, that is right, very talented John Hodgman.
John Hodgman, yeah. Really good. I don't know who the Mac guy is. Is he famous in any way?
He was in Dodgeball.
Oh, yeah. I recognize him now. Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. The kid. So... interesting because all of these ads are kind of rank propaganda, no viruses, all that stuff. But this last one I thought was kind of interesting because it's Apple saying we do business too. Do you think that's signals a change for Apple in any way?
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting is Apple. I mean, the while these ads are really really fun, they're also probably the hardest hitting Apple ads ever when it comes to just outright shaming people for using a PC. I mean, what they're doing is creating an environment of you know, it is, you're just not cool.
Isn't it
you
preaching know, to the converted though? I mean, do these ads, they work with us as Mac aficionados.
That's the thing is I think of these almost more like Super Bowl ads. I think these are spectacle ads. I don't think they're there to, I don't think they're there to persuade. I think that they're there to get attention, and they're very clever. And, you know, it's funny. I think they're working kind of a Super Bowl angle, which is they want people to be reporting on these and digging these.
It's working.
And
we just played two of them.
That's right. But do you know what I'm saying, though? It isn't the typical sort of like, here's how you're going to get, you know, 20% more clean with this soap. It's you know, making a different kind of case straight to kind of a media savvy audience. And yeah, I mean, I think it's working on that level.
If they can convince people that, of all these facts, though, or facts, or all these suppositions that the Apple is more creative, and yes, it could do business too. It's got Microsoft Office, blah blah blah. Those are important things to convince people of. Do you think that people aren't looking at these?
I think it's actually aimed at the base, to speak in political terms. I think they just want to make sure they keep the base tied into what they already know. And I don't think that they're going to convert tons of people myself. I think that they just keep everybody that's already a Mac person a Mac person.
Well, I think as somebody who's been accused sometimes fairly of being a Mac partisan on my site, I mean, in my experience, people don't like even clever remarks that insult them. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? It's like, I guess I just don't see this being something where somebody who uses a PC who's heard all this on some level before, I don't think they're suddenly going to just, I don't think this is going to be the ad that says, oh, well, gosh, now their ads are really clever, so I'm going to go out and buy a Mac, even if the facts line up.
Do you think it could backfire and actually piss them off?
I don't know if it matters. What do you think, Alex?
Well, I think that this is I think once again, it's not something that is a, you should get it right now. I think it's a constant little low level attack at using a PC. And I think it actually is aimed at the middle. I don't think it's necessarily, I mean, obviously people that are on one side enjoy it, but I also think that's what's going on is there's a lot of people that are getting frustrated with their PCs. They're getting frustrated with viruses. I mean, I know that my dad has this law firm, and they bought PCs because they have one application that they couldn't run. This is before they bought them, just before, like 6 months before the Intel switchover. But they were just, it's just incredible. They have an incredible amount of frustration with the PC. They're not using it because they're proud of PCs or because they want PCs or whatever. They're using it because they have something that they need to use it on. And what's happening though for a lot of those people, and I would argue that that's a huge margin of the PC users are using it because they need something else. And even if it's only 10 or 15%, that's a huge market growth for Apple, of taking these people who are frustrated with their app and continually digging this little spike into them where they, when they get to the next one, they're just like, I don't care what I need to use. I'm going to, you know, and I think it just reminds them of the things they don't like about their PC. And I think
that's really true. I think PC owners aren't necessarily all that fond of them. Many of them, anyway. Those are the ones you're going to win over.
Yeah, there's definitely people that are really into their PC, and you're not going to win them over. And these ads aren't going to make any difference. But I think that Mac users tend to be Mac users. I mean, they're really excited about their computer. They're to a level of almost religiousness, oftentimes, where there's a huge chunk of PC owners just by the fact that it's 95% of the market or 96% of the market or whatever. There's a big chunk of those users that just don't really care. It's just the computer. They barely know the difference between OS X and PCs. And so this is starting to tell those people, and even if it's only 10 or 15% of the market, that's three or four times larger market than what Apple has right now. So it doesn't have to be all of the PC users. It only has to be those ones on that edge of just, oh, I can't deal with this anymore.
Something that Apple might want to cultivate is the feeling that Mac users have of being special and being kind of like the BMW owners. That's not a bad thing. Apple doesn't have to get 10% market share. It's very profitable. Maybe one of the ways to keep their current core group happy is to make them feel unique, special, different.
Yeah, I think Alex put it really well, actually. You know, I think it's so funny when I go out there and look at sites that are out there, and I say, oh, there's this software that looks really interesting. And, you know, to somebody who uses a PC, it seems almost asinine to use a Mac to a lot of them, you know, just because it's like breathing air. It's something that they don't even think about there being a second or third platform that's in contention. But for those fence sitters, for those people who, like Alex said, are getting a little bit, they're starting to feel kind of uncomfortable about the way they've got to do these updates, and they keep hearing all these terrible things.
Oh, I think there's
knows? This, yeah. Yeah, and this might be the brand awareness kind of thing that kind of, you know, gets that interest high enough to check things out.
Fourth quarter for CS3, Adobe's Photoshop, won't be universal until first quarter, I'm sorry, of 2007. Meanwhile, Contribute is out. And there's been noise that Contribute is a shot across the bow of Apple. Why do you think that is? What's going on, Alex?
Well, what's going on right now is that Contribute has been released, but it's only running in emulation. So it's running
it's not universal.
Apple's Rosetta. Yeah, it's not a universal application. And that's a, you know, having a new app. I mean, Adobe basically said, well, when we release the next version of things, we'll upgrade things to
all
universal.
All across the board.
The argument is Adobe, you know, there's obviously talk that Adobe's upset about Apple moving closer and closer and closer to their market. First with video, and then in some cases audio, and then also you know, with photography, with Aperture. So is Adobe upset? I personally don't think it is as I don't think the division. I mean, I definitely think Adobe is frustrated with where Apple's going, but I'm not clear that it's that this Contribute issue is really part of that. For a couple reasons. One is that Contribute's not that doesn't have a lot of overhead.
Doesn't need to be
right. It'll run just fine in Rosetta, yeah. Until they get to the point. It is a lot of recode when you're doing, you know, for some applications it's a very quick fix to go to universal, and they did it quickly. I think a lot of the Adobe apps are legacy applications where there's just an enormous amount of code that's been there for a long time. Making it all work universally is more complicated.
Well, especially Photoshop. I can understand that. I mean, that's a lot of work to get that work.
And the question is it really cost effective for Photoshop to be switched over until they were going to come out with a release anyway, which is scheduled.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Rumors are, I don't know exactly when it's going to come out, but rumors are sometime in the spring. And I think
they've promised it by March, end of March.
Right. Right. So we'll probably see it around there. And so I think that I don't know if Adobe is really trying to pick a fight. I mean, I think that there is a looming battle between Apple and Adobe, and I think it's one of those things. It's kind of like us in North Korea, you know. I mean, you know, or probably not that rough, but there is. I think that there's an issue where you know, Apple is starting to slowly encroach on where Adobe's going. They could fairly easily reproduce not all the features of Photoshop, but a lot of them fairly quickly. There's lots of rumors that there's an app, and you know, floating around inside of Apple that will do a lot of what Photoshop will do, but they won't release it unless Adobe did something like drop. I mean, for both of them, they need each other, because Apple represents, you know, half the Photoshop users most likely, and Adobe, obviously Photoshop is a huge driver for new machines, and Apple would lose an enormous amount of the market that they're in if for some reason Photoshop wasn't available. So both of them have to constantly be developing the what will happen if that happened kind of thing. But I don't think
have
that,
you used
I
Contribute, Merlin? Didn't you post something with Contribute?
You know, actually, I just downloaded Contribute today. I haven't had a chance to play with it yet. I am, however, a longtime Dreamweaver user, and you know, even as I like to think I know my way around HTML, I still use that for projects. Going back to what Dreamweaver Ultra, when you know you could first do PHP MySQL integration, and you know, I can't speak because I haven't used Contribute yet. What I will say is that it's been really frustrating with so many of these applications like Dreamweaver to just see. I mean, the feature set, you know, you get. So I'll speak just from a user point of view, okay? And that is that it feels like they update the palettes a little bit, they add a little bit of stuff, but it does not get any faster. It's really painful to use, and I don't know. I mean, there's so many applications out there that are shareware that do a lot of the content that people need out of an HTML development application, and then on top of which you've got these kind of lightweight languages that are entering into it where you don't need a lot of, you know, heavy integration.
People have been really getting excited about the blogging capability of Contribute.
Tell me, what is that?
Well, it's got support for blogs, so you can use
blogging. I misunderstood you. No, I see. Now that's terrific. But I mean, again, it doesn't
fill a need that's a strong need.
I don't know what it's like to work inside of a company like Adobe and have to, you know, pull those teams together. So I don't want to be presumptuous. But all I can say is from a user standpoint, these things should be feeling a lot faster at this point. You know, and for somebody like me who does, so what I'll do is when I do it, like say I do a site for a friend's band. That's just the easiest way for me to do it. It's very easy to make those changes.
Dreamweaver.
I don't have to fiddle. Dreamweaver, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, gosh, you make one change and you just sit there and watch that window churn and churn on this one little change. And I don't know. I guess I'll play with Contribute and get back to you next week. But I think the blogging integration, that's terrific. Ecto feels like it's kind of stuck in one place for a while. So it'd be nice to see some ways to have...
Despite the daily updates, it still doesn't seem to be getting anywhere. It's got Tuck Classic's tires spinning in the mud there.
Hey, Leo, I can jump in regarding the Aperture Apple controversy, because I happen to know that something interesting happened during the development of Aperture that a lot of people aren't talking about, and that is that I don't know if it was formal or if it was coincidence, but one of the big shot Apple engineers went over to Adobe, and one of the big shot Adobe Lightroom engineers came over to Apple, and they switched jobs, and that was during the development phase. So I
was there a player to be named later, or was it just an even trade?
Yeah, it was somebody moving out of the minors into the bigs. No, I don't know whether that was a coordinated effort, but what I do know is that they both clearly had access to inside information on the other's projects because each had been coming out of the other's camp. Ooh. So I don't really think there's a big Aperture problem here in terms of that's why Adobe's mad, because if you look at Aperture, they've been very careful to make sure that there's no pixel editing or masking capabilities in Aperture. And I personally believe the reason why is they don't want to tick Adobe off.
We did a benchmark, a call for help. I've been wondering about which is the fastest way to run Photoshop on a Mac these days. Is it faster to run it in Rosetta, faster to run it in Parallels as a Windows application, or faster to run it in Bootcamp? But of course, Bootcamp's easily the fastest. In fact, really, the dirty little secret of Photoshop is that the Windows version of Photoshop has always been faster than the Mac version of Photoshop. But even in Parallels, it's faster than Rosetta. So... at this point, I think this is a big glaring hole in going Intel is this lack of a good Photoshop. It is dog slow, really, for some of the
things. It is. That's why I use Aperture every day.
Is there anything else? Is there a risk that Adobe might lose its market lead by this delay?
No.
There's nothing else.
I think that's why they're not in a rush. I mean, there's nothing else that really goes head to head with Photoshop. There's a lot of people that would like to say that they.
I'm sitting here. I just want to resize a file. I have to launch Photoshop because I can't find anything better. I'm sure that is
resizing files. You can do with Automator. You can resize files.
I'm not going to fire up Automator to resize a single file.
That's the funny thing, that Photoshop has become such a name. I mean, it's one of those names like Google or Kleenex. It's just become synonymous with photo editing. And the fact of the matter is, way beyond 80-20, I think if you took any five Photoshop users, at least at the lower end, they're probably using about the same 10% of features by and large. I mean, if you're like me, you're doing Gaussian blur, you're doing Unsharp mask, just a few things that like digital photographers use. But, it's so funny to have that be so synonymous and to have, I mean, am I wrong? Did this not get its start on the Mac back in the day? Was Photoshop not first?
It was Mac only.
I mean, I still got a little sore spot from the whole Quark Express experience a few years back. And so, I mean, maybe they don't need Macs anymore, but it sure would be surprising to just kind of cede that market share out of some kind of a perceived grudge.
That's not going to happen.
That seems very hard to believe.
I still think Apple represents half of Adobe's customer base, and so with Photoshop specifically. And so it's probably 40-50%. And the other thing that's important to remember is generally there was a stat that I don't know if it's still true, but this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, that a stat that I saw go by that said the top, let me see if I say this correctly, 90% of the top 10 percentile of publishing, of graphics and everything else. So, 9 out of 10 people in the top 10 percentile were using Macs. So, and that means and what we're talking about is ad agencies and the higher end pieces.
Yeah, they need that market. That's a big market for them.
While you may say half of the Photoshop users are using PCs, the ones at the top are generally using OS X are using Macs and are pretty religious about it. And I think that the real question is that the reason I don't think this will ever happen, I just can't imagine Adobe going down that path, is because if Adobe dropped OS X, Apple would release something very, very fast. And they would, and I think Adobe would find very quickly that the users are more committed to Apple than they are to Photoshop. And I think that's why I don't think it's going to happen. I think Adobe knows that pretty clearly. So I don't think that there's going to be, I'm actually frustrated that we don't see some of the Adobe. I think they're giving up space that I think Adobe's giving up room that they don't need to give up when it comes to, I would love to use Audition on the Mac. I'd love to use, there's things, Premiere would be useful on the Mac. There's some stuff that's on that, that would be useful there. I'm surprised that they gave up as much space as they did. in that area. And I think they're getting kind of, because it's just painful. The infrastructure around on a PC around media development, it just isn't that good.
A couple of upsets moving along on the iTunes Movie Store. We're starting to see, well, is it ads or promos from in Lost, which if you pay for a TV show, you kind of hope you're not going to see any time-wasting promos.
Yeah, but we pay for movies and we see them. You know? I mean,
yeah, I was going to say, you bought a DVD lately?
It's yeah.
a death march to get to the opening.
Good point. Right. And then the other one, which I think is more serious, is according to a number of people, the quality of some of these iTunes movies leaves a lot to be desired. It looks like they're merely upscaling the lower quality movies from 320 to 640. And as a result, you get highly pixelated movies. I have to say, I got the Life Aquatic of Steve Zissou, and it looks terrible. Far from DVD quality. And apparently, some of these things, Apple's just upscaling them until it gets a higher quality version in there.
And you're not just talking about the movie.
Your predictions are vindicated, Scott.
That's right.
All your predictions come true.
I'm enjoying my DVDs on a regular basis, and I'm my 50-inch television is shrunk to 49 inches, but other than that, everything's fine.
Shrinkage. Is it cold water? Is that the problem?
That's it.
Yeah. I think this, I mean, if Apple's doing this, and it seems to be, there's enough evidence and enough screenshots on the net to make it seem like it's pretty true. That's reprehensible. Now, here I am paying, what is it, $14.99 for a movie that is a 320 by 240 image scaled up. I mean, that's awful. Surely they can do better than that.
Well, I think that for me.
So it's actually the films that are getting that we think are getting scaled up?
I'll find the article, but
I thought it was the TV shows that were just looked like they were the same.
TV shows, and I think some films as well.
Yeah, because I know that some of the TV shows were doing that. My guess was with the TV shows was that what that was really revolved around is that they just can't get the new ones.
Had them.
Every single TV show, and that will happen over time. That was my guess, but I could be wrong.
Did you guys talk about this last week? Am I bringing up a beating a dead horse? Okay.
We didn't talk
about it. But I do want to say that Mahjong looks very good.
my Yong, I think he called it. I've been playing Bedazzled, which I like. I mean, the control interface of an iPod is not ideal, but it's kind of nice to have. And the sound is great on the games. A decent game on the...
I haven't stopped playing Mahjong since last week's show.
You're kidding.
I'm addicted. I haven't changed clothes.
Oh, you're not
in
joking.
7 days.
Oh, come on. No. Surely you've changed your clothes.
Quit calling me Shirley, Leo.
You put in here have you played any of these games, Merlin or Alex? Anybody else? Bejeweled. I said Bedazzled. Bejeweled a lot.
My mom likes that. I haven't played a video game since Yara's Revenge, but
I don't think they have that yet.
Can I get that? Can I get that for my iPod?
You know, hang in there. It's only a matter of time.
I don't know if you remember that game. You're a ghost named Yar on a quest in space. I don't know if you remember that.
I have been historically addicted to Tetris, and it's
Tetris
actually very, very
Tetris
good
would be a good on game on this. Yeah, because you could rotate.
It really is.
There's not much to it.
Yeah. The rotate really is much better than the keys that I've been using for a long time. And so it's actually Tetris works really, really well. And I kind of wish I hadn't put it on my iPod because
I'd love to see somebody port some of the old kind of text based games over to an iPod.
How would you enter it? What would you, I guess you could select choices from a menu.
Well, yeah, I mean, but think about the interface. It's pretty perfect for going through some kind of a text adventure.
A menu.
I want Tetris.
I want to play
not Tetris. No, never mind. I lost it. It's the one where you
can't really ask for it if you don't know the name, Alex. I just get a little hint. You need to know the name. People would do that. When I worked in a record store, people would do that all the time. They'd say, you know that song? I want that song. What's that song that goes, you know, na 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 na? And I go,
You never did the morning show.
Same thing.
And they start humming. Humming, and you're just like, oh, I don't know.
It's a job you
I'll
do
try know. To get it on for you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, right. That's it. Of course, that's the dirty little secret of the request line. It doesn't matter what they ask for. Yeah, I'll try to get it on. And if it's in high rotation, they're in luck.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends on how sexy their voice was when they called me.
You know what I learned? I have to say, and I think every DJ learns this early on, and eventually every radio listener learns it early on. The better the voice, the worse the looks.
That's why I work in radio.
I'm a face made for netcasting.
A face made for netcasting. Michael Robertson, the guy who did MP3.com, he's doing Linspire right now. He's doing SipPhone. has come forward saying the Zune will be the biggest flop of 2007. I don't know what his standing is for this statement, though.
That could be harsh, but I don't think it's going to be a hit. I think that
he says, you know, less than 50,000 units worldwide. I think he's completely wrong. In fact, having played with a Zune now, and you played with it too, Alex, I actually have a higher opinion than I did before.
I have a much higher opinion since I started to play with it. So I will say that when it first came out, when I looked at the opportunity, you know, like what they were working on, I was like, yeah, right. But when I played with it, I was actually more impressed with it than I thought. Now, the question is, would I be willing to get it in addition to my iPod? And possibly, and I think some of that is connected in the same way that the iPod was connected to iTunes. I think some of that's connected to Soapbox, you know, and how good Soapbox gets. And
is that, that's the video really store that Microsoft's going to do?
Yeah.
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 And so yeah, I have to say, if the Zune supported the iTunes Music Store, I would prefer it over an iPod.
Really?
See, that's the problem. That's always been the issue with all of these players. They don't have an iTunes Music Store. And one thing we know for sure, Leo, you wouldn't be listening to any Netcast on your Zune.
No, nor podcast neither.
Speaking which of, is like, hello, what in the, I mean, of all the things to leave off.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's sort of like having a golf course with no grass.
Yeah. I have to think that some of it is the word podcast. They just don't want to put the word on there.
I mean, they've got 1,700 lawyers at Microsoft. Yeah. They cannot be scared of Steve Jobs.
Speaking of renaming campaigns, Robertson also says he's been looking for a good word to describe what happens when you lose all your music to copy protection, you know? And he says, I think the word is zooned. I've been zooned. I can't play my songs. I've been zooned. And, you know, this is one neologism that might stick. Forget Netcast. I'm putting my money behind the zoon horse. I think he's absolutely, that's a great word. I've been zooned.
Yeah.
He says the real problem with the zoon is the copy protection. He might be right.
Well, that's the problem for everyone, though. I mean, everybody has, you know, they have not made the DRM fairly transparent. Well, no. The way it is in iTunes.
It's much better in iTunes, yeah. It's there. It's still there. It doesn't go away.
Right. I mean, I think that it is, part of it is that Apple, and I've said this before, Apple really focuses on the consumer. I think a lot of other ones really focus on how do we develop our relationship with Hollywood, because they don't have as much leverage. And I think that what we ended up with on iTunes was this compromise between what Apple wanted and what Hollywood wanted. Whereas when we look at what other people are doing, they're just asking Hollywood, well, how do you want us to handle it? And Hollywood tells them. And I don't think it's good for Hollywood to get what they want, because it's way too restrictive. It isn't workable, and they're just going to keep on allowing Apple to move further and further forward.
Well, but one thing, just to play devil's advocate here, like we spent a few minutes there talking about how great and smart, you know, Mac users are and how well informed we are about all these things. I mean, isn't there some kind of a corollary in place here where, I mean, you know, so we're really into Macs, we're Mac people, whatever, but, you know, I mean, could it also be that there are some folks sitting around, you know, in the flyover states waiting for the Microsoft player to come along, you know, and they're not going to sit there and read a bunch of CNET articles about DRM. They're going to say, is this the Microsoft player? And they're going to buy it. I guess I just think the Robertson guy, who's done some great things, that was a pretty red-faced kind of screamy.
It's a good way to get attention.
Editorial. Yeah, but I mean, like, let's be honest. I mean, you know, sometimes beta doesn't win, and sometimes people have Sprint for their phone carrier, right. And sometimes people rent coffee tables. There's all kinds of weird consumer decisions that go on that aren't happening at the very highest level of cognition. And just to say out of hand that because there's this DRM is a problem, this is going to fail, I don't know.
I can tell you why it's going to fail. I have the answer.
You cannot the answer.
You cannot play Mahjong on the Zoom.
The interesting article in Computer World from Mike Elgin, who says that Zune scares Apple to the core, mostly because of the viral and the social element of it, which makes kind of sense. I think one of the things the Zune has going for it is this ability to share songs. I mean, I think the kids will dig that.
I think I'm too old for that. I think I'm too old because I don't want to share my song. Like when
you can't
I'm
have my songs.
Out.
They're my songs.
Well, no, it's
no,
just
no,
like
no, when the kids do that. They go, hey, listen to this. You're going to love this.
Yeah. Yeah, Leo, you're going to try like crazy to share Jesus Christ Superstar with everybody. No takers anywhere.
But just to kind of flip around and be the other devil's advocate, but I mean, isn't that the problem with the DRM? Is that sharing is kind of a huge pain in the butt?
Well, it's easy to share, but you only get 3 plays or 3 days.
You're limited. Exactly. You're limited in that.
I think that's what makes it. I mean, that was the key to making sharing work, is that it does facilitate that. It's something you can't do in an iPod. You know, go ahead, try to bump your iPod to somebody else's iPod and send the song over. At least you've got 3 days or 3 plays.
Right. Yeah, I've always thought that was kind of crazy about the DRM. I mean, if there's anything that you learn about the way this stuff works virally, it's that you can just slip stuff to people and
people like that
fan and go and buy it. And you know, and to
you
me,
would
that
do,
would
you
be,
know, you would do that. If you walked up to me and say, "Hey, have you heard the latest Sloan?"
Yeah,
I could see you doing
exactly.
That.
And I have to admit that I find that hotels, oddly enough, hotels in Canada, I don't know why it's in some, not as much in the US, but when I'm in Canada for Tech TV, I'm almost always, there's almost like 6 to 8 of people's LimeWire collections that
there's
are
there's a lot of LimeWire
up
there. You're right. Yeah.
You're right. So there's this, but the thing is that for some reason, LimeWire, the folder is shareable automatically, I think. And so you don't see the rest of their collection. You see their LimeWire collection in iTunes. And I do admit that it's kind of fun to listen to their music instead of my music. And I learn a lot about songs that I wouldn't. You can't download them. You can't move them back and forth, you know, over iTunes sharing stuff. So I can see how that might be useful. But, I think that the hard part is that if I could buy that song with Wi-Fi, you know, right now you can trade the songs back and forth, but I still have to go back and buy it somewhere else. I can't buy it over the Wi-Fi.
Well, to round back up to an old evergreen of ours, this is also something where the notion of an Apple phone gets really interesting. Because if you do have the ability via discoverability to say, well, you know, let's say just for the sake of argument that you have something as crummy as that 3-play DRM deal, that's still a pretty good gig. If I see somebody who has an iPod phone or whatever you want to call it, and I say, okay, I want to be able to beam them almost like I want a contact from Palm, say, send them this Sloan song, they get to listen to it a couple times, and if
I
they
think
like
that's
it.
Great.
Yeah, I think that'd be now. Do you think that's the kind of thing that the labels and the studios would freak out about?
No, that's the whole point. That's why the 3 days are 3 plays. I think anything more than that, they'd freak out. But I think they love this idea because guess what happens after 3 plays? You get a button that says "Buy this song."
Well, and you've just captured a customer for free. Again, somebody else is paying.
It's wonderful.
Free.
It's every record label's dream. It's like
who's
radio
Sloan?
Play. You don't want to know.
Who's Sloan?
Don't get Merlin started. Go ahead. Who's?
I'll tell you what. You know what I'm going to do tonight, Scott? I'm going to burn you a new wax cylinder, and I'm going to have the Pony Express bring it down to you. And
is Neil Young in that band?
Neil Young. No, yeah, he is. He's from Canada, so you know he could be.
He could be.
Yeah.
Someday they'll have a. You know, I wonder. Actually, the Rock and Roll Heaven, the Canadian wing, is fantastic. That's where you want to go. Interesting.
Right. Someday Gordon Lightfoot will be
there. Someday. Well,
if you
rush
read
things,
my mind.
Don't rush things. Actually, really, some of the best Canadian artists are still alive, which is much more than you can say for the U.S.
A little known fact, Canadians don't die. That's
they don't
something
die.
A lot of people,
they never,
no,
never
it's,
die.
It's remarkable. It's
the free
health care. Exactly.
Yeah. No, I think it's the
you
weather.
You know what? Let's do a future episode that's just about Canada. Can we do that?
I would love to. I've become a Canadian fan. You know, I go up there now every month. And isn't it great? Merlin's going to come back now. We got Merlin on the Canadian.
I'm so hooked on Canada now.
I love Toronto. So, I mean, it's definitely a trip I look forward to. So,
I tried to move there in 1970 when I was courted by somebody.
And you got flat feet and everything was okay, right? I wish I had, I don't have on my new Mac Pro. I wish I had the Sony drive. I have, unfortunately, one of the Mac Pros with a Pioneer drive in it. But for those who have Mac Pros with a Sony DWD150A, there's a hack on hardmac.com, for turning it into an even better drive. This is wild. Apparently, somebody had the good sense to look up in the Sony catalog. There is no DW150A. Apple has done some deal with Sony that allows them to rebrand a better NEC drive. It's faster. It burns more media. It does DVD RAM. And there's a simple firmware upgrade. Not that simple, but there's a 12-step firmware upgrade that you can make that will turn your... Now, guys, I was going to do it before the show. I thought, I feel confident. You change your,
you're crazy.
You flash the firmware in your DVD drive. And if I had only had that drive, I would have done it.
This is like operating on yourself with a steak knife. Your kernel is going to be gone.
Quick, give me a Bic pen. He needs a trach.
You're going to have a nice shiny thing to put Post-it notes on.
My favorite thing about this, Leo, is you always try these experiments nanoseconds before the show.
Right. It's not working.
Well, last week I installed 10.4.8, and I couldn't even restart my computer after I finished the install.
I've heard a number of people complain about 10.4.8. I didn't have any problems. Was it an Intel problem or a G5 problem?
It appears that it's an Intel problem, and from the anecdotal evidence that's showing up, of people that I've talked to, most of the anomalies are showing up on Intel Macs. There's a lot of new stuff in 10.4.8.
Did you fix your permissions before you installed?
I did not.
That's it. You know you're supposed to do that. well, you laugh, but it's true.
The patron saint of Macintoshes, John Gruber, has a terrific post on this from, I guess, probably a year or so. Because you remember Zeldman had posted this really great thing about the kind of rain dance chicken waving that he does before any update. And Gruber went through and kind of, it's a long one, too. It's very, very elaborate. It's like, and then find the head of Alfredo Garcia and place it in the middle of a room. Draw a circle. Say jobs three times. Come up in single user mode. Now you have to drink three times.
The body of Christ commands you.
It's funny because it's true. That is actually one that I do. I do two things straight off the Gruber / Zelda.
You get an old priest and a young priest.
They walk into a bar. Oh, banana. Two that I believe very much. And number one is wait. seriously, unless you are really bleeding and just crashing all the time, consider waiting for at least
a day or maybe a weekend.
Yeah, and then when you do, I use something called Applejack. Do you guys use that at all?
No, what's that?
Applejack is a single user. It basically installs when you start up in single user mode, you come up in bash or whatever, and you run this thing from the command line. So even if your card is hosed, the GUI part is hosed, you can come up and use Applejack to repair permissions and
The Mac Medic told me about this. Yeah,
it's a nice app. It needs an update for Intel, but anyway, I would say the waiting and then doing the repairing your permissions.
Repairing your permissions makes sense, unlike a lot of that other voodoo. If you have a file that the update can't modify because its permissions are incorrect, you may well have a bad.
I would also always run FSCK, just to make sure, because sometimes those little dings on your hard drive from crashing and quitting, you can screw yourself up with that pretty bad.
Yeah, actually, you want to run permissions. Sorry, Alex. You want to run permissions from safe mode to really do the good job.
And that means holding down the shift key when you boot, or do you mean in single user mode?
Holding down the shift key.
Shift key, okay.
And then finally,
it takes a while because it's running a full FSCK. If I remember correctly, it runs a full FSCK anytime you do safe mode. Does anybody?
Oh, is that true?
That's correct. That's why it takes so long, and you get to the little spinning.
FSCK is the file system check.
FSCK check disk. Yeah, file system check.
And finally, it's tempting, and this is what I did, and I have to admit, I got a little bit relaxed about it because I haven't had any issues for a long time, and I just kind of, I saw it in software update and figured, well, okay, fine, because it was in a long list of other updates that were coming in. And
it was a big list, wasn't it? There was
all the iLife stuff. So I just ran it and didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. And of course, it wouldn't restart. And one of the things is using the combo install. So there's you can download and install, the update and actually run it rather than using system update. In which the guys here told me that that's how they got it back up again was to do that. And so I do one install, it doesn't work, and then I just hand it to Alutha. So I'm like, Alutha, you need to make this thing work.
And we all need Alutha.
I know we do all need.
Where's my Luther?
Yeah,
is his name Luther or you just call him Alutha?
Alutha. Alutha okay. is his Alutha. Name. Okay. Alutha. Yeah. So anyway. You just hand it to him, and then I came back a couple hours, and it was working, and it was all good. So.
So we have.
I went shopping.
Any other news stories before we get to our picks of the week? None.
Nope.
I going once, going twice. All right. Merlin, I think you've got like three picks of the week.
Well, you know, this is as usual. I have nothing of substance to contribute to anything that you guys are talking about, except to say that there are applications that I'm excited about.
I beg to differ, my friend.
tonight on Fishing for Compliments. but I am very excited about a program. Apparently, Scott's been using this since he was a youngster during the Lincoln administration. But there's with your permission, Leo, I'll mention something that we saw in Call for Help. You and Callie. So I was up in Kanadia shooting Call for Help with you guys. And one of the sessions I was not in, you guys were demoing something called Video Queue.
Something Callie's been using on Geek Brief since day one, I guess.
Which is just remarkable.
Blew me away.
The quality of what she gets with that is amazing. But in a nutshell, because, you know, the world needs more personal blogging, this is a vlogging tool or a vlogging or whatever. You make video podcasts with it. It's really drop-dead simple. You type in a little bit of a script, and then it's just drag and drop. You just say, I want my so for example, I want this camera view at this point. I want this title at this point. And it's almost like if you remember back in the day with Premiere, that kind of an approach of dragging and dropping, it's super easy, super functional, and it just spits out video in no time. Something that I shared with Alex a little earlier today, this is the first app I've come across, first consumer app that makes it really easy to do some kind of video work with two cameras simultaneously.
It's pretty cool, I have to say. Everything's keyed to your script. So when you get to that point in your script, your lower third graphics come on. When you get to another point in your script, the camera switches. So
that's right. And actually, the more I think about it, the more it really does remind me of Premiere now that I think about it. But
you know what reminds me of? A multi-million dollar demo that Sony did at NAB about 10 years ago of the Ultimate Newsroom, where they had a scripting program that did all of this. And they said, look, one person could do the entire thing. And it was millions of dollars. And this is $90 for the full package, $40 for the basic package. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. I totally bought it today.
Did you? Now, what camera? Are you going to use good cameras? Because you can have two cameras.
No, I like to have the quality of my cameras roughly equivalent to the quality of my content. So no, I'm using the built-in Mac Pro camera, and I'm using as a second one using the my old EyeSight camera, and it just works like a champ.
That's a great idea.
Did you find it pretty easy to use and pretty transparent when you were demoing it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It couldn't have been simpler. How about you, Scott? You said you've known this program for a while.
Well, actually, I use it every day, and the way I use it is as a teleprompter.
Yeah, that's the fundamental core, but then you have these other tracks that you can say, when you say that, put my name down below me.
But see, I don't actually record video podcasts with it. I just use it as a teleprompter when I'm reading spots.
You don't even record with it. Oh, that's a good idea.
I just use it as a teleprompter when I'm reading spots. I throw it up on a 30-inch Apple Cinema display, and it's, you know, instead of buying a multi-million dollar teleprompter, I got a $40 teleprompter. It's really, really cool because I have to read a lot of radio spots, and, you know, it's just easier to put them up. And you can actually dial in. You can say, okay, this is a 60-second spot. It'll put the little red bar across the thing in 60 seconds so that you know how fast you've got to pace yourself.
That's amazing.
It's just so you know, it's varasoftware.com, V-A-R-A software, oneword.com. And I've just started playing with it, but just to kind of get a feel with it. But I'm going to
probably you shot your telephone man pieces?
Yeah, that's a famous character of mine, the phone guy. It's a guy who talks loudly in public into his wallet.
That's up on
YouTube. But yeah, so I'm going to start doing some 43 folder stuff in this, varasoftware.com.
How about
this brought to you by Merlin Mann.
Merlin Mann. How about you, Scott Bourne?
I hate all of you so much.
No, I think this is great. Do you have a pick?
I have a pick, and it's a really cool little app, and I can top everybody in terms of price because it's free.
Free.
Comes from our friends at Rogue Amoeba, and anything they make is cool because their name is Rogue Amoeba. It's called SoundSource. And if you're like me and you've always got all kinds of things plugged into your Mac, microphones and mixers, you can just call this little thing up off the menu bar and select which input and output device you want.
Wow.
And you don't have to go to the system admin panel and do all this. You can go to Rogue Amoeba and download this puppy for free. And man, is it cool. And I'm using it as we speak.
Hallelujah. That sounds great. I'm going to get that because I spend a lot of time in the sound control panel trying to figure out what's pointing to what.
Yeah, you know, we always do that. You know, we're trying to record, and we're going, is this thing on, and why is it working?
Does it work with SoundFlower? I mean, if you have a lot of other channels, will it work with it?
It works with anything. It works with Gizmo. It works with Skype. It works with iChat. It works with you. And it's free at Rogue Amoeba. It's called SoundSource.
This is our second pick from Rogue Amoeba.
But, and Scott, that I'm breaking the rule here and looking at the web while we're talking. But the freebies page at Rogue Amoeba looks like it's loaded with really good stuff.
Oh, those
looks
guys
like a lot of little utilities that are super useful.
That you have to have all of them, but this is by far the most valuable in my opinion. And these guys really specialize in simple, easy to use products that just do like one thing really well. And I will never ever own a Mac again without SoundSource. Mm,
sounds great.
This podcast was brought to you by...
It ought to be brought to you by, but it is not. Now let's turn to Alex Lindsay and see what...
I've got two again.
Two? Good, because I don't have one, so you'll do
okay,
two,
one
two for
you,
me.
Anyway.
All right.
So one is, just to extend a little bit of what Merlin was talking about, is that one that I'm testing that I'm actually pretty excited about also from Vera Software is Wirecast 2, which is the... kind of the big brother of video queue. So Wirecast will actually let you use FireWire cameras as well as, you know, so you can do three sources and add a lot of pieces. You can actually do a live broadcast with Wirecast, although you still need the bandwidth somewhere, which I'm still working on. So anyway, but you can. Here's the big thing that's different between Wirecast 2 and other options. There used to be, or there still is, this program called Channel Storm. And it came out in like 2001, and I was really, really excited that you could switch between all these cameras, you could add your graphics, but it would never let you put a source file, like a high quality source file, on the hard drive. And that's something that Wirecast 2 will let you do. So even if you're not broadcasting, you can have three camera switch, you can be switching back and forth, adding graphics, and when you're done, you're done. And you have it all recorded, and then you can go into your compression, and then you can put it up as a podcast. And one we're going to be experimenting with your cameras, Leo, of figuring out.
I was wondering what happened to those cameras.
They're still here. We're still doing tests with them. But we're going to be doing a three-camera test actually today or tomorrow with Wirecast to see, you know, because when we did Twit, we would have to sit there and you know, we'd shoot them all separately. It would be great to be sitting there with a G5, and when we're done with it, it's ready to post.
All this stuff makes me want to do some video podcast of some kind, just to use this stuff. I mean,
totally.
Just me, just sitting in my office, do something. You know, if I had a character like the phone guy, I'd do it.
But you know, that's a really good point, though, Leo. I mean, and this is just, you know, part 35 of this rant for me, which is, you know, whether it's podcasts or whether it's video podcasts or whether it's blogging or whether it's whatever. You know, these tools are sufficiently easy to use that you can capture just these kind of little bagatelles, these little moments.
Right.
You don't have to go out there and start out with some kind of unified field theory for content on the web. I mean, God knows there's enough of that out there. This really enables people, if they got a little funny thing they want to do, to go out and do it. And it's so lightweight, you know. And in some ways, the way that, you know, you can blame Bob Dylan for all the terrible songwriting, kicking off the songwriter phase that led to so many terrible songwriters, this will probably, you know, birth you know, 1,000 terrible podcasts, but you know, there'll be some great ones too. And I love the ease of use of this stuff. I think it's tremendous.
I just don't have the bagatelles to do it. I mean, I feel like
I've seen your bagatelles.
If I had bigger bagatelles, I might try something. But you know, it'd be, you know,
let's go easy on the bagatelles.
All right. And you said you had a second besides Wirecast. You said you have a second.
Yeah. So my second one that I just love is OmniGraffle. Now, I don't know if you guys have played with OmniGraffle.
Everybody's got it. It comes with your.
Everybody's got it. Everybody's got some version of it.
Are you using the pro version?
Yeah, I use the pro version, and the OmniGraffle and Omni Outliner is great too. But OmniGraffle lets you build these great little flowcharts and great charts. And I use them for a lot of my, you know, stuff when I'm trying to describe very complex, you know, this is how all this stuff comes together, or this is how the visual effects pipeline works, or this is how we need to handle the bay or whatever. It does a lot of that stuff for you. All the little links between little arrows and everything just kind of jump and lock from box to box really easily, and then drag along with it. So you could do it in Illustrator, you could do it in a drawing program, but then every time you decide, oh, the boxes aren't quite what I want, if you had a whole bunch of stuff flowing into one box, you just grab onto that box and move it, and all the little arrows move along with it. And when you're done, it prints, it'll do print quality, you know, really high resolution quality versions of these for presentations and stuff like that. And it's just fun to lay stuff out in it. And it's a very Mac app. You know, it's really built for the Mac. It just feels good. It comes with a lot of images and stuff like that. It's just definitely worth checking out. That's it.
Have I mentioned PodTube, or did you guys mention PodTube?
I think we did.
Okay,
and we talked about that and TubeSock. I think we talked about.
Yeah, we covered that last couple weeks.
Okay,
yeah,
but they're worth mentioning because they're so fun.
Yeah. I've been playing with them, and it's just a way to get stuff off YouTube.
I was just using it today, 5 or 6
times. I'd love to be able to automate that, to tell you the truth. I mean, in the same way that like you can, once again, I'm bringing up democracy. It would be so great to be able to point that at a feed and have it automatically rip all the daily shows.
Yeah,
to,
or every Lonely Girl 15, you just have them all, so you'd never have to worry. about what's happening to Bree.
Never have to worry.
I will say something about Parallels because I'm a big fan of Parallels. Running Windows on the Mac with Parallels just is great. And I have to say that Windows Vista RC2 came out on Friday, immediately worked out of the box with Parallels. I was able to install it. So, a big thumbs up for the folks at Parallels who have upgraded it now to work with the Mac Pro and unlimited memory. And it works great with Vista, which is pretty cool. If you want to try, you know, Vista has been a free download of the beta, and if you want to just see what it's like as a Mac user, if you've got 2 gigs of RAM or more and you've got a powerful enough machine, it's pretty amazing.
Does it give you free viruses too?
Yeah, your viruses are free. Yeah, everything.
No extra charge. Adware is free.
All comes with it.
Okay. Built in. I can't wait.
You sound like a Mac bigot, Scott Bourne.
I am. I can't help it. I just freaked out the first time I heard this whole notion of, I know everybody loves it, but I am not putting the blue screen of death on my Mac. No way.
Well, it's not like boot camp where you really are installing it onto the Mac. With Parallels, it's just a file. It's unobtrusive. If you throw the file out, it's gone. So it's really kind of a great way to use Windows without any commitment.
I have to say, though, the scariest thing about my boot camp was when I did the 10.4.8 thing in my OS 10 wouldn't launch.
But you could run Windows.
It would automatically, it goes, I can't find the folder, I can't find the folder, and then it would just jump into Windows. Oh, and I was like, oh, no, I'm in Windows hell. You know, it's like all I can use on my Mac. It's like that Outer Limits with the librarian.
Actually,
all he wants to do is read, and then he ends up with broken glasses.
You know? Many people don't realize that was the point of 10.4.8, it was the new Windows upgrade to Macintosh. It seems to work fine on your system.
It was actually mostly Aperture, Leo.
Was it really?
Yeah, there was all those little things you had to do to iLife and all that.
That was
stuff.
All to support Aperture?
That was all to support Aperture.
What a waste of time. I do want to say, if you're a Merlin man or a Getting Things Done fan, you've got to go to 43folders.com. Because Merlin is beginning a sec. There are going to be more than just the one of these interviews with Getting Things Done, David Allen.
This is really exciting for me. Thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, it's a podcast series that we did together. We went into a studio down in Ojai and recorded a couple hours of stuff.
It's fantastic.
So this will be rolling out through probably the next eight or so weeks.
Well, I'm a Getting Things Done fan. I've read all or at least both of David's books on Getting Things Done. And I'm a big Merlin Mann fan, and of course I learned a lot about GTD from 43 Folders, but it's great to see the two of you together.
You'll never believe that two grown men could talk so fast at the same time.
You're both getting a lot done. 43folders.com. The first one is up right now on procrastination. I'll get it tomorrow.
And also, I got a couple front cells. Mac Break, the regular video version, will be doing another Automator session with Sal later this week. So it's definitely worth checking out.
And don't get
Automator with your eyesight.
Don't get scared if you go to MacBreak.com and all of a sudden you see Twit.
Yeah,
that is intentional.
Just passed it on.
Kind of scared me, to be honest with you. Wait a minute, that's my site. I know we'd planned it, but I didn't. Essentially, we're taking down the MacBreak site and everything.
Yeah, we're just getting everything into Twit.
And at some point, Scott, you and I will coordinate on getting iLife Zone moved over as well.
That's right. For now, iLifeZone.com and eventually Twit.tv, and all 32,000 of my lowly listeners can't wait.
Can I keep my domain name for now, Don Leo?
No, I'm sorry. Everything must come to me. Yes, you can, Merlin, absolutely. But there will be a time. And maybe that time will never come when you will come to me and say, Mr. Corleone, I need a favor.
I make for you, your daughter, a beautiful cake.
I will do you a favor. That time may never come, Merlin Mann. So now we can say, have I plugged everything? Podcastingtricks.com, 43folders.com, pixelcore.com, twit.tv, and next Tuesday, another Mac Break Weekly. A Mac Break coming up this week. Say again, what's the subject we're going to talk about?
Sal Segoyan talking about using Automator and your eyesight. So it should be...
Was I there for that?
You were.
Okay.
You did it with him.
I'm going to watch it because I don't remember a thing. So it'll be great. It's all. That's one nice thing about having a bad memory. It's always new to me. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see. We need a closeout for this.
Look what they do to my boy. Look what they do to my boy.
Okay, that's good enough. We'll see you next time.